Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's go around the NFL to keep you in the loop. Brought to you by BioCleanTex.com on Sports Radio 610.
J.J. Watt, $500,000 to the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater... Wait, he's not here anymore. Greater Houston.
Greater Houston.
Not Arizona. Greater Houston to help create 6 technology centers at their clubs around Houston for the kids. This per Mark Berman. So you can take J.J. out of Houston, but you can't take the J.J. charitable donations out of Houston.
He sucks at football.
No, you don't. But that's why people love J.J. Watt, man. I mean, as I read it, and I could be wrong, it could be coming from his foundation, but as I read it, J.J. Watt himself was donating $500,000, which is just remarkable. And he wasn't lying, man. When he left, Houston's always going to be a part of me. I love this city. It's going to be my home when I retire. I mean, he said those words, which was, I think it was kind of underplayed. Here's a guy from Wisconsin. Lived in Houston, obviously loved Houston, but he says he's gonna live here when he retires. That's pretty awesome.
I heard the breaking news. I heard Sean Pendergast have the breaking news when I was driving in this morning. I think it was 7:30, and I assumed when he said J.J. Watt just announced him and wifey were preggo.
Oh wow!
That was my initial thought. Is J.J. Watt, the Watts are joining the Correas. And the Watts are going to have a baby. Did not happen.
What if in 25 years, J.J. Watt's baby married Carlos Correa's baby? That would be like next level.
Be next level. Speaking of which, I'm looking at Daniela Rodriguez.
Like how I did that?
You did well.
Rodriguez.
I'm proud of you.
You knew it was going to be a lot. You know it's going to be a crazy gender reveal. So look at this. That looks like a tasty treat right there, right?
It sure does.
She put a picture of her food. Looks like good food. I think it looks like pudding and strawberries or something. At the bottom, there's a picture of a baby, and it says, "Truly, it was baby that requested this, not me."
Our love story.
See, this is what we're talking about. this is exactly what we're talking about right here. They are what they are. You know, you love them, but it's going to be extra, extra, extra with them and the baby reveal.
Gender reveal is going to come. I will say when the Astros, did I say that?
No, I said baby reveal.
Oh, I think when the Astros return home from this road trip, that's when the gender reveal comes. I think it's coming in July. We will know what the baby's going to be.
Yeah.
Carlos has that glow.
He's feeling pretty good. I'll tell you what.
I feel like he's going to have a son.
Oh, from the glow?
Because I think most parents want a boy the first time around, right? You didn't, right?
I wanted a girl. But, I can't tell you why.
But I feel like most men, I think most women, just based in my case study, I'm not speaking for all of you.
Yeah.
But it seems like if you're planning on having multiple kids, you like for the first one to be a son.
You always want a son. Don't get me wrong. I wanted a son. I just... For some reason, I wanted a baby girl for the first one. And I got 2 sons and a girl, so lottery.
Lottery.
I won the lottery. I got 2 boys and a girl.
What is that hand? Like, lottery.
Lottery. I won the lottery.
Okay. 713-572-4610.
Why is that funny?
Didn't know you had a hand motion. Victory going, but
yeah,
there it is.
You hit the lottery.
I hit the lottery.
There it is. Cha-ching, cha-ching. Lottery.
Yeah.
A lot of Texans fans hitting the lottery. There is a party tomorrow at 6 o'clock for Texans fans. It is, quote, the final chance to reserve your seats for the upcoming season. That's what the invitation said. I proposed this earlier in the show. I actually got a lot of backing. Put out a poll on Twitter as well. I think it's at 83% yes. The Texans should get new uniforms. 83.4% right now at Landry Locker if you want to vote. The Texans should get new uniforms. Now, you talked about this being lipstick on a pig. You talked about this being just a Band-Aid on something that needs surgery. I don't disagree, but it's also the only thing you can change. I think the culture, the tradition of the Texans, I think there should be a culture change, not a let's keep things the way they are. I think a lot of times when Cal McNair speaks, on one hand, he says that things are different, but on the other hand, he speaks and it seems like he's hanging his hat on the way things were in the past. So it's confusing. So yes, it absolutely is duct tape on car repair. I get that.
Yeah.
But I just think the Texans need new uniforms. So I have some sort of tangible change. Even people who are down on the Texans seem to agree with me for the most part. Uniforms, si, senor.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool. It's not the fix, because you said the only thing they could do to kind of regain your interest is change the uniforms. No, it's not. That's not the only thing they could do. Is it the only thing they would do? Maybe. Because they could fire Jack Easterby and fix this problem. I'm talking tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of fans would regain interest in the Houston Texans if they fired Jack Easterby. How they don't see that is beyond me. The uniforms would be fine. Sure. You know, I think what's going to happen at this mixer today is they need to sell, and they probably will sell, the event, the spectacle of football. Not this football team, not how good they're going to be and how far they're going to go, but, hey, man, we've got the best tailgating in the NFL, which is, some people would say that. We've got this.
They do.
Indoor stadium. Yeah.
Don't change that.
They do. We got the stadium. You got players coming in like Trevor Lawrence, you know, the number one pick, and all these other players coming. It's the NFL. The game day experience inside the stadium is so much better. That's what they're going to sell. But that's still not going to fix the team.
They're not going to fire Easterby, though.
They could. They could. If they really, really value selling tickets, they would.
Does Nick Caserio care about selling tickets?
I think to a smaller degree. The main one is Cal McNair, who has the most control on being able to sell them. Well, Cal McNair and Hannah McNair, you know, the higher ups. Greg Grissom, new president of the company.
Jamie Roots, by the way, got a new gig.
Yeah, how
Jamie
about that?
Roots, the
CEO,
president for the Texans. He is the CEO of what?
The Houston Dynamo and Dash.
Okay, there you go. So he stays in the city.
Mm-hmm.
He joins a squad. I've always liked the product. I've always enjoyed going out there. Make no mistake about it. That organization is better off now than they were before they made the decision to bring in Jamie Roots.
For
I think
sure.
Both of us can agree with that.
For sure. He's gonna bring big things to that organization. He actually played college soccer, believe it or not.
At Clemson?
Yeah, at Clemson. So he's very familiar. I know he was in with the start of the soccer league, I believe. I could have that wrong.
Columbia, 4 years with Columbia.
Yeah, that's what it was. He's going to do great things. It's going to be a great event.
Good for him. Jamie Roots lands on his feet. Amy Paulsik, another departure. She landed on her feet in Jacksonville. We mentioned J.J. Watt. He's in Arizona. Deshaun Watson, we still don't know where he's going to end up. Chris Olsen, the cap guy who who the Texans decided to say goodbye to. Chris Olsen, he is in Atlanta with the Falcons, with Arthur Smith and all them. So a lot of these guys that are leaving the building, I've always felt like the biggest measurement of allowing people to leave your building is whether they latch on with other teams. Like too often, Bill O'Brien would trust these guys, and then all of a sudden the Texans would be done with them, and you'd see them on like seven teams in 2 years. Tom Savage is one of the examples.
Mm-hmm.
You see these guys, and then all of a sudden they're gone.
Yeah.
And then you say to yourself, okay,
whatever happened to that guy? Yeah.
Maybe they hung on to that for a little bit longer. It does seem like the guys that the Texans have gotten rid of and the guys that have left the Texans, for the most part, they find themselves in pretty decent situations and organizations trusting them to do pretty decent things, which is not really a great representation of an organization in the NFL.
Well, I mean, once you have the NFL on your resume as a coach, you're going to get a job. Now, how good a job, how big of the opportunity is a whole different story. But like Bill O'Brien is basically in rehab. You know, he's in Nick Saban rehab. Lane Kiffin was talking about that last week, how Nick Saban just basically corrected his life as a coach, and that's how he became Ole Miss head coach. Doug Marrone went to Nick Saban rehab. Bill O'Brien is hoping, obviously, you know, your guy at UT went to Nick Saban rehab.
And real rehab.
But I'm saying, as a coach, that's what Bill O'Brien is hoping. This isn't the best job an NFL head coach could have gotten after he got fired. A lot of them get another head coaching job.
It's up there, though.
Yeah, it's up there.
Pretty good one. Landry Locker, yeah. John Lopez, Figgy Fig. I'm going to have you respond to a text.
Okay.
This text was very, very polite. Mm-hmm. There's some non-polite texts in the same form. I want you to respond to this.
Okay.
8684, please get over the Easterby thing being an issue. Your response.
How is it anything but an issue? Everything that this organization is right now points back to one person. Not my opinion. It's the observations and opinions of people in the building. Andre Johnson, you respect him? You think he might have a little insight to what's going on over there? All these people, I'm not going to mention them by name.
Deshaun Watson basically called him out too.
Deshaun Watson did too.
JJ,
yeah.
Don't think he's the biggest fan.
Right. And then other people who have been in the front office that have moved on. I'm not going to speak for them because they haven't gone on the record, but you got to believe someone who's been here.
We might have mentioned some of their names, I would say, a minute ago. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Anyone who's been here for 20 years and all of a sudden leaves, there's got to be another reason there, you know? And so, yeah, you can say move on, but I don't want to move on from what the biggest problem is with my football team. I don't want to move on from that. I don't want to move on from being able to fix Cal McNair's problem with one thing, and he knows it. He has to know it. And I don't want to move on from what you are absolutely in this extremely small minority, because look at all the texts around him. I'd be back if Easterby was fired. Look at all these texts. I mean, that guy's a cancer. He's this. He's that. It's an easy fix, but sure, move on.
Move on, guy. Shout out to you. Shout out to all the loopholes. If you listen, you are one. Coming up, a sticky situation in MLB that Zach Greinke wants no part of. Next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
There was drama in the MLB yesterday. Zach Greinke wants no part of it. He ain't got time for it. The sticky situation. Pitchers now, as they head to the dugout, are getting patted down. Like people entering a mall, like people entering an airport.
Full body cavity searches.
They check your belt. They check your hat. They check your shirt. It's an interesting scene. I actually think it's not bad for baseball. I'm actually intrigued by the whole thing. I know the pitcher seemed a little bit upset, which actually added to the enjoyment of my viewing. That's just me. I like the theater of the whole thing.
That's the word.
But I can understand where the players are getting frustrated. And Max Scherzer, who was actually Zach Greinke's opponent in Game 7 of the 2019 World Series, he took exception with Joe Girardi. We'll hear that in a sec. But what are your thoughts as a guy who covered baseball for a long time, seeing pitchers walk off the mound and basically be patted down like they're about to enter a courthouse or something like that?
Oh, I think it's an absolute joke and a sham, a fraud. We talked about it when they first referenced this. It's not about, you know, cleaning up the game or whatever. It's about trying to find new fans, trying to get more offense into the game by limiting what a pitcher can do. It's blown up in Rob Manfred's face big time. It is good theater. I agree with you. I mean, I'm transfixed when I'm watching all these videos of Scherzer and who was the A's pitcher that basically dropped his
Romero.
Literally dropped his pants.
Romero.
To show the umpire. And all these others with these frustrated looks on their face. I saw him doing, you know, Brooks Raley yesterday. I was watching the game. He was a little bit calmer about it, but you could tell frustrated. It's an absolute joke. It is the dumbest thing that Rob Manfred has done, and I know some of the dumb things that Rob Manfred has done, because there's always going to be a way for these pitchers to
Romo
to do this. Oh, that was a pitcher?
Yeah.
There's always going to be a way for these pitchers to do this. You're not pure in your intent. It is good theater, but it's an embarrassment for the game. And managers already, as Joe Girardi illustrated yesterday, are gaming the system, which is even a different kind of gaming the system than spider tack on a ball.
Here was Zach Greinke being asked about it. There was obviously a lot of drama. There were obviously a lot of pitchers ticked off. Zach Greinke didn't really seem that bothered by it. And Zach Greinke was asked about the sticky substance and all the drama going on. This is what he had to say.
Hey, Zach, how do you think the checks of foreign substances went tonight? And what do you think of Major League Baseball's crackdown of the situation that started on Monday?
There's been some times in the past couple weeks I might have been ready to answer that. But at this moment, I haven't been thinking about it at all. So I don't really know. I don't think it's a good time for me to respond because I don't have a good response for it.
Right, there you go. Right. So Zach Greinke has no time for it. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's anything more to that? Do you think maybe he's a little bit frustrated? You think he just doesn't care? You think he doesn't want to be a sound clip during the peak of it to where maybe he says something and he gets in the headlines? What do you think about Zach Greinke? You, by the way, the best interview in town right now.
I was just going to say, I'm going to believe what Zach Greinke said because I think he's just, if nothing else, honest. And he probably felt like he needed to be better prepared to answer that question. I believe him.
It was a little bit different with his counterpart in Game 7 of the 2019 World Series, Max Scherzer. It started with Scherzer walking off the mound, getting searched for the first time. He basically, it looks like he's about to drop his pants, and he's throwing the hat up and whatnot. Here is what it sounded like on NBC Sports Philly when Scherzer was leaving the field.
Joe Girardi is asking the home plate umpire, Tim Timmons and Alfonso Marquez, to take a look at something. Joe must have seen something with one of the baseballs. Scherzer's looking over the dugout saying, really?
Davey's upset.
He is upset. The manager has a right to ask an umpire to check.
All right, he has a right, but I mean, I think you got to respect the game a little bit more if you're Joe Girardi.
It's an easy fix.
You already know that this is a sensitive topic and you're adding fuel to it. And that's really where the drama reached a peak. Joe Girardi asked the umpire to go out there and check on Max Scherzer. And that's where Max Scherzer, you could tell, got really pissed. You could hear the fans actually booing Joe Girardi just now, which is interesting because Philadelphia usually supports their own. They don't like the idea of this either. And when the third out was executed by the Washington team, Scherzer was walking off the mound. He was looking over his left shoulder. He was looking right at Joe Girardi, which led to Girardi leaving the bench, going at Scherzer and one of the coaches for the Washington Nationals. And this is what that sounded like on NBC Sports Philly.
Max Scherzer, as the inning ended, gazing over toward the Phillies dugout, didn't say anything, just looked, and then Joe Girardi came up and said, come on over, firing everybody up, and he was ejected from the ball game. That's the ejection from Tim Timmons, 40th ejection for Joe. Scherzer mad, showing his hands.
Well,
I think if you're Mad Max, you should be careful, though.
Yeah, you know.
Should be careful.
Well, here's the thing. Joe got upset, and you get it. He's staring him down in the dugout.
Look, first of all, he wasn't gazing. He was, in fact, staring, and staring quite harshly. And Joe Girardi was doing the old hold me back thing the whole time. It's good theater. It's fun to watch. I enjoyed watching it. It's a joke what they're doing right now to Major League Baseball with these pitchers. How serious are you about cleaning up the game? There's got to be other ways to do it. And how serious are you about trying to fix one problem but creating another, or avoiding creating another? Because Joe Girardi was gaming the system. Forget what he might have said after the game about why he asked them to search Scherzer. He did it because he was trying to get him out of a rhythm, etc. Well, the easy fix for me would be, if a manager asks for a pitcher to be examined, so to speak, then he loses a challenge, a replay challenge in that game. So that way it makes them think a little bit. Is it really that important to me? Am I really convinced, or am I just trying to game this, throw him off rhythm? Or, is he cheating, and I could maybe lose an important challenge later in the game?
So you're calling it a joke. Here's what Max Scherzer, or Mad Max, as they were calling him on NBC Sports Philly, this is what Max Scherzer's reaction was to all of the drama yesterday that has the internet going nuts and is taking the top headlines around the country.
I wasn't heated. I was just trying to show, okay, I have absolutely zero on me. I have nothing on me. Check whatever you want. I'll take off all my clothes if you want to see me. I got nothing on me. This is not the answer. There is a problem with spider attack in the game, and we got to get rid of that. But I also think there's a way to handle this in a better way. Obviously, Girardi watched the bomb at bat. I almost put a 95 mile an hour fastball on his head because the ball slipped out of my hand. That's the confusing part, is I'm just trying to get a grip of the ball, and you can even watch in that previous at bat, the ball slipped out of my hand, almost drilled somebody in the face.
Did you view his decision as performative or an actual, baseball thing?
I don't know. I'm not just going to get into it. It's just, it is what it is. It is what it is. Whatever. Turn the page, move on.
How does it feel for you, a veteran that has pitched for so long, to be essentially called a cheater from another manager?
I don't know. These are Manfred rules. I mean, go ask him what he wants to do with this. I've said enough. Go ask Alec Baum how he feels about 95 at his face. I don't need to say anything more about this.
All right, I wasn't heated. I think you're lying there, Max. much respect for you and winning that World Series in 2019. Thanks a lot, AJ Hinch. But I don't believe you. Here's his manager, Dave Martinez, talking about his observation from what went down, the drama, the sticky situation that baseball is going through in front of our very eyes.
I thought the umpires did a good job with it. I really did. I mean, it's part of the game now. They did that due diligence. So as far as Joe's concerned, I think he's got to answer the tough question about that. I don't need to answer that. We came victorious, so there was no sticky stuff. Let's just say that. The umpires checked. Everything was good. So like I said, Joe, I think Joe's got to answer the tough questions tonight.
All right, there you go.
And he did.
And here is Joe Girardi, the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, formerly of the New York Yankees, answering the tough questions that Dave Martinez just insisted that he answer.
What did you see that prompted you to ask them to inspect Scherzer?
I've seen Max a long time, since 2010, but I've never seen him wipe his head like he was doing tonight, ever. It was suspicious. I didn't mean to offend anyone. I just got to do what's right for our club.
Does he have a reputation as a guy that might load it a little bit? Maybe you had a heads up there?
No, I didn't have any heads up. But again, like I said, I've seen Max pitch a long time, and I've never seen him do that. And that's why I did it.
Okay, there you go. Joe Girardi, not really holding back. Max Scherzer not holding back. A lot of pitchers frustrated, managers. A little bit of gamesmanship going on there. I don't anticipate Dusty Baker to be one of those guys to do that. I think there are going to be a lot of old school mentalities where they're not going to try to invoke this rule, which I think many of them think is silly, but we will see. Joe Girardi, so far, the first manager.
Not the last,
but the first to ask the umpires to search guys. And while this is going on, Zach Greinke just kind of chilling, living his best life.
Trying to still get his answer together.
And the Astros living their best life. 9 straight, going for 10. 10! Shout out to Billy Bob, going for 10 tonight. Rockets going for two. The history of the number two overall selection and what to keep an eye on. This is a very fun case study. It's going to make you smile. It's going to make you cry. It's going to make you happy. It's going to make you sad. So many emotions that come with number two. We'll go through all of them next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Best number two picks of all time. 1954, Bob Pettit. 1956, Bill Russell. 1960, Jerry West. 1965, Rick Barry. 67, Earl Monroe. 1968, the man with one of the best throws in the history of basketball, Wes Unseld. 1970, the man who made one of the most famous proclamations in the history of this city, Rudy T. 1972, Bob McAdoo. And then 1981, the man known as Zeke, Isaiah Thomas, by way of one of the most abusive coaches of all time, Bob Knight at Indiana. Most notorious number two overall pick, 1984. What a year that was. Sam Bowie out of Kentucky. The next pick in the draft, went to the Chicago Bulls.
Was he good?
They selected Michael Jordan. He was all right.
He was good.
That would be regret when it comes to the number two overall pick, which the Rockets won yesterday at the lottery. In the spirit of this, little case study, let's start in the 90s. I want to go through number two overall picks, and I just want to, J-Lo, ask you, would you take this guy or not? And then we'll use some hindsight and we'll talk about guys who went later on in the draft that these teams could have had. And oh my God, there are some heartbreakers specifically in the 2000s. 1990, Gary the Glove Payton out of Oregon State. If the Rockets could get Gary the Glove Payton out of Oregon State, I don't want to speak for you, but I feel like you would be okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, he would star in the league right now with that game that he had, the glove defense. And
he's got
able to shoot.
He's got a marijuana strand in Vegas.
Marijuana strand.
I think it's at Cookies. I think it comes in six packs, pre-rolls, all that.
Alex Caruso's going to get one soon, I heard.
Your people don't hold him down.
Those people still make me mad about that. Yeah, no, Gary Payton I'd take.
1991, another point guard. This one was a lefty by way of Georgia Tech. The New Jersey Nets selected. They already had Derek Coleman the previous year, I believe, out of Syracuse. They took a guy out of Georgia Tech, Kenny Anderson, the number two selection out of Georgia Tech. Dikembe Mutombo went number four. Steve Smith went number five. But you would be okay with Kenny Anderson. Sometimes it's not as simple as we could have had this guy. Sometimes it is. But Kenny Anderson.
You take Kenny Anderson and you don't complain.
Good player.
Yeah, you don't complain.
He was very good for Chuck Daly when Chuck Daly was with those Nets squads, I believe. 1992. Out of Georgetown. The Charlotte Hornets selected. They'd already selected Grandma Ma before that. Charlotte Hornets select Alonzo Mourning.
Absolutely.
One of the most famous gifts of all time. Alonzo Mourning, you would definitely take that.
100%.
1993. One of the tallest players in NBA history. By way of BYU, Sean Bradley was the pick of the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, serviceable. Had his moments. You take him at number two.
No, you would not. You're crazy.
No, I'm saying if you got Sean Bradley right now on this team, you wouldn't take him?
Hell no. Hell no. He was out of there quick. He went to the Nets. Then
I'm talking
Mavs.
About just as a player. No. I'm not talking about his career there. No. Yeah. Really?
No. Hell no.
I know T-Mac. T-Mac thinks no.
Now, after Sean Bradley, you also look at this draft. Penny Hardaway. Shout out to Lil Penny. Mm-hmm. One of the best campaigns Nike's ever done, went number three. Jamal Mashburn out of Kentucky with Rick Pitino. one who had his heart broken by Christian Laettner. He went four. Career was short-lived because of injuries. And then number 11, Allen Houston, the sharpshooter out of Tennessee that ended up doing some good things with the Knicks. 1994. Jason Kidd. Would you take that?
You think? Yeah, I'd take the Hall of Famer in a heartbeat.
1995. Very good player out of Alabama. Now the Clippers drafted the rights. They traded him to the Denver Nuggets. Antonio McDice.
I like Antonio McDice. I liked him. Yeah, he was a good player.
Very good player.
Physical, tough.
You want to say smart, tough, dependable?
Physical and tough.
Okay. Right after him,
tough,
though,
smart, dependable.
You look at 3, 4, 5 after McDice was selected. Jerry Stackhouse out of UNC. His college teammates, Rasheed Wallace. And then a very, 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 very skinny high schooler. And I want to say very, 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 very skinny high schooler that was on the front of Sports Illustrated leading up to that draft, I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Garnett. Damon Stoudemire was 7th. He was actually rookie of the year. So Antonio McDice, solid player. Stackhouse, Rasheed, KG, maybe a little bit better careers, but you're okay taking Antonio McDice.
I am. That's a draft right there, man.
Woo. It's top 10. That's for dang sure. I had a Damon Stoudemire jersey. I remember
Mighty
that.
Mouse?
I got it signed. I actually have it at my career.
Didn't he have a Mighty Mouse tattoo?
He did.
Yeah.
Right there on there. You want to talk about the Marahucci.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put him out there too much. He's a college coach now. But yeah. When the Harp was talking to him after the game, I can guarantee you that.
Your guy Harp?
He was talking to Damon Stoudemire a little bit more. 1996. Marcus Camby. That was the last real great run of college basketball. I remember that tournament. That was when you still had Duncan at Wake Forest.
Yeah.
You had the Cuban backcourt and John Calipari with Marcus Camby at center. You had that Hoyas team with Allen Iverson, Othella Harrington, yep, the Junkyard Dog, Jerome Williams. That was a nice run.
And David Robinson.
Of college.
No, that was 87.
College basketball. 86. You're going way back there, bro.
I missed by a decade.
I've
covered a lot of basketball. Give me a break.
But you had Marcus Camby in 96 as the number 2 overall pick. One of the best drafts of all time. AI was actually the first pick in Philly. But listen to who went after Marcus Camby. You can't blame Toronto for taking Camby, but my God, Sharif Abdur-Rahim. He started off very good. Injuries kind of caught up to him. Stephon Marbury out of Georgia Tech.
Shout out hoop.
Ray Allen, number 5 overall, out of UConn. Antoine Walker out of Kentucky, the number 6 overall pick.
Who was 13?
Kobe Bryant
was
13. Drafted by the Charlotte Hornets. 14, Peja Stojakovic.
Yikes.
15, you already had Kevin Johnson and Jason Kidd in Phoenix by that time. Dallas had actually traded him to Phoenix, but they took Steve Nash. That ended up working out okay. Or they traded him to Dallas,
yeah,
and when they got him the second time around, that's when he was Steve Nash. He actually didn't develop in Phoenix. It was in Dallas and then back to Phoenix when he developed, but still great player. And then Jermaine O'Neal, number 17, another high schooler who Portland added to their deep squad, J.O. 97, Keith Van Horn, out of Utah. He went number 2 overall. Chauncey Billups went number 3. Now, Chauncey Billups in Boston, because this was Rick Pitino's first pick. This was the Tim Duncan pick, followed by Van Horn, and then followed by Billups. Billups never really developed, so who knows how he would have ended up had he gone to
anywhere
New Jersey, where Van Horn was eventually traded. But the best player not named Tim Duncan in that draft was Tracy McGrady, who was selected at number 9.
Yeah, and again, another high school guy, so it's hard to judge those later picks when they were coming out of high school.
1998, you remember when the Wildcats upset the Wildcats? It was a very stacked Kentucky team.
I was in the arena, my man.
They were look at you. Yeah. They were facing a 3-guard offense with Miles Simon,
Mike Bibby,
Jason Terry. They had a hell of a squad. That was a very, very good squad. Bibby, the number 2 overall pick in 98. Vancouver selects Mike Bibby. Now, he takes it to a new level in Sacramento, but you can't knock that pick. But it is interesting who went after. Vince Carter went fifth. Dirk Nowitzki went ninth. And Paul Pierce went 10th.
Look at those three guys right there.
Of course, that draft round here will be remembered as the Rashard Lewis draft. The hometown kid crying in the green room as the Rockets take another member of that Arizona team, Michael Dickerson, Turkshawn, who never really did much, and then Bryce Drew, the Valparaiso, the shot and all that, as Rashard Lewis looks on, cries, ends up going to Seattle.
Does all right for himself.
Has a pretty good career. 1999, the Rockets benefit from a disgruntled Stevie franchise. He's drafted by the Vancouver Grizzlies. I've never seen someone look more pissed off after getting drafted than Steve Francis. He's then traded to the Rockets. Stevie Francis, solid number two pick, although I don't think Vancouver was the place for him. He did not want to be there.
Yeah, he made that very clear. Very clear.
2000, Stromile Swift. Now, you roll your eyes at that, but that draft was not good.
Nowhere. Nowhere
in
that draft.
It was not good. Jamal Crawford, Mike Miller both went in the top in the lottery. Those are really the only two guys that you can say those were solid NFL pick or NBA picks. So sometimes it's just not there. I think that's an interesting lesson, too, the 2000 draft. 2001, back to the high schoolers. You had Kwame Brown go number one. Mama's cooking.
Yep.
Number two, Tyson Chandler. He gets drafted by the Clippers. He's traded to the Chicago Bulls. Never really fully developed with the Bulls. It wasn't until he got to New Orleans and then went to Dallas when he fully developed. But I wouldn't call that a bad pick. But I would say the third overall pick
was better.
This one hurts.
Yeah.
Paul Gasol went third after Tyson Chandler. I think it's safe to say that if you're going to be drafting a post, you would rather have Paul Gasol than Tyson Chandler. Is that fair?
Maybe even still.
2002, Jay Williams out of Duke. Now, unfortunate because Jay Williams, he was arguably the best player, or he was the best player in college basketball, had the motorcycle accident. The best player in that draft, it goes back to the high school thing. You can get that if you're sitting at the end of the top 10.
Yeah, back then.
Back then, those high school guys, a lot of people sleep on them.
Mm-hmm.
Mari Stoudemire was the number 9 overall pick in that draft. Of course, injuries kind of plagued Amari Stoudemire, but at one point he was arguably the best power forward in the game. 2003, this is the one. If you want to talk about a kick to the nuts and you want to talk about screwing this up, 2003, Darko Milicic.
Mm-hmm.
Darko goes number 2. Carmelo Anthony goes number 3. Chris Bosh goes number 4. And Dwayne Wade out of Marquette goes number 5.
How many titles behind him?
Melo does not have one. Bosh has 2. Wade has 3.
Oh, yeah, 3. I thought I was going to say 2.
So 5.
Wow.
Three Hall of Famers, though.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
To say the very least. 2004, Emeka Okafor out of Connecticut. This is another example of kind of a med draft where there wasn't any franchise-altering player available.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of the card that they were dealt. 2005. Do you draft for potential or do you draft the polished guy? That's a lot of times the question that you have to ask. Now, the Atlanta Hawks decided to go with potential. They went with Marvin Williams out of North Carolina. Right after him, number 3 and 4, Deron Williams, Chris Paul.
Deron Williams was
awesome.
Awesome. Absolutely.
I remember the first time I saw him, he was at the Colony. I went to watch Bracy Wright, who ended up going to Indiana.
Oh, that's right. He's from Dallas.
He's from the Colony. And yeah. I was going to watch him. They were playing the Horton brothers, Daniel and Kyle Horton, mm-hmm. who went to Missouri and Michigan. And I was going to watch Bracy Wright, and I was like, who is that doughy fat guy over there mixing dudes? They're like, oh, that's Deron. We were calling him Deron because no one knew. They're like, oh, that's Deron Williams. He's going to Illinois. I was like, that fat guy's pretty good. He went to Illinois, trimmed up. Good career, got hurt a little bit. 2006, another guy from Dallas. LaMarcus Aldridge. D-I-S-D used to be able to hoop. Chris Bosh from Dallas as well. So you had Bosh, D-Will, and LaMarcus Aldridge all from that area. LaMarcus Aldridge out of Texas. The Bulls drafted him. traded him to Portland for Tyrus Thomas.
That wasn't the best of trades, was it?
It was a good pick. Although I'm not sure they were the ones that wanted to make it, but I would probably would have rather have LaMarcus Aldridge over Tyrus Thomas. 2007, Kevin Durant. He's pretty good.
Kevin Durant ended up being all right.
2008, a guy from the same high school region as Durant as well, up there in the D.C. area, right? You played him in AAU, right? Beasley's from Maryland.
Yeah, he played for the D.C. United
yes,
team.
Okay. Yeah. So Michael Beasley out of Kansas
Lived
State.
Lived in Florida for a while, too.
You know how that works. Yeah. Right after Michael Beasley, two college teammates go, Russell Westbrook 4, Kevin Love 5. I think you'd rather have either one of those guys than Michael Beasley.
Yeah, he was a baller, though.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Beasley had the potential, but, it didn't happen. 2009, Haseem Thabeet out of UConn. This one hurts. James Harden goes 3rd. Steph Curry goes 7th. So you get Haseem Thabeet. James Harden goes right after. Steph Curry goes 7th. Two of the best scorers in NBA history, and you have a guy who is washed out of the league in a few years in Haseem Thabeet.
And that was right at the transition time of, you got to get a big man. You got to get a big man. You got to get a big man. No, you don't. You really don't. Just look at this Harden and Curry, fellas.
2010, Evan Turner out of Ohio State goes before Boogie Cousins at 5, Babyface Hayward at 9, and Paul George at 10. I thought Evan Turner was going to be really, really good. I mean, he solid, decent career, but not as good as the guys that we mentioned. Derek Williams out of Arizona in 2011, Kemba Walker 9, Klay Thompson 11, Kawhi Leonard 15.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good pick at 15, I'd say.
Kawhi was not even on some boards in the first round. So that was just a good, strategy to draft him.
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, the number 2 pick in 2012. Bradley Beal goes number 3. Dame Lillard goes number 6. Ouch.
Mm-hmm.
Oladipo, the number 2 pick in 2013. This is another guy getting drafted at 15 that... I mean, I don't know too many people who saw this coming, but the Greek Freak actually went 15 in that one.
And how old was he? He was also a teenager.
Greek
right?
Freak was young. Yeah, yes, he was very young. Yeah. Jabari Parker in 2014. Joel Embiid goes 3. Julius Randle 7. The MVP of the NBA, the Joker, Mr. Jokic, goes 41. Yeah. Hindsight's 20/20 there.
Yeah. Well, they didn't even have high regards for him then. Either.
He was fat.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't fat. He was big.
Yeah.
2015, D'Angelo Russell goes before Kristaps Porzingis goes number 4. And then Mr. Booker, whose Suns are up 2-0 in the Western Conference Finals, goes 13. 2016, Brandon Ingram out of Duke. Good player. Jaylen Brown goes right after him to Boston at number 3. Then you have Lonzo Ball in 2017. Who goes number 2. Now,
good
this
pick.
One hurts. He's a good player, but he's not Jason Tatum.
No.
Jason Tatum went number 3 to the Boston Celtics. Lonzo Ball, good, although no longer with the Lakers. Jason Tatum, better. Donovan Mitchell, 14, and then Bam Bam goes 15 to the Heat. 2018, Marvin Bagley. This one hurts.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the ones that really hurts recently. Marvin Bagley goes to Sacramento. Okay player, good player, but he's not Luka and he's not Trae Young, who went 3-5 respectively.
I mean, just look at those two names by any stretch. So the story here that the lesson to be learned from your hard work of getting that all together.
In 2019, Ja Morant, if the Rockets can get a Ja Morant number 2, sign me up, buy me a jersey, let's eat.
Just be happy with the guy you get if he can play and fill the role for you. I don't think they necessarily need a super duper star. There's going to be a superstar drafted in this draft, at least one. You got to hope it's your guy, but you just got to get the guy that fits. And, a lot of these guys are taken so much later in the draft anyway. It's so inexact.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. So number 2, number 10, and a party for the Texans tomorrow. For the OG John Lopez, for Figgy Fig being the best in the world at what he do, for Stanford Route joining us for his weekly visit at 1240, I'm Landry Locker. This has been another edition of In the Loop. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. But in the meantime, Clint Sterner and Ron Hughley are next.
Dreams are dreams. Some dreams come true.
Thank you, Figgy.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you.
I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.